I arrived at Agnes Scott in September 1919 by way of streetcar and underpass, as we all did in those simple days. As I approached main building, I met Dr. McCain, then registrar, who said, "Miss Laney, may I take you into the office to meet Miss Hopkins and Dr. Gaines?" In time, Dr. McCain became president, retired, and was succeeded by Dr. Alston. I have thus had the privilege of working in the English department under all three presidents of the college. My first classroom was over the old gym, where I taught verse forms to the accompaniment of folk dance rhythms from the classes below. My meals were in the old White House, where we had grits and hot biscuit for supper and waffles for Sunday morning breakfast, and where John Flint served the faculty table a possum dinner annually. I have watched the construction of every building on the campus, except Main, Rebecca, and Inman, and have seen the college receive every possible academic recognition. We worked hard in those days, as we do now, and we played hard. All classes preceded the 1:30 dinner. After dinner coffee in Cleo Heron's upper room in Lupton was a gay occasion, where Catherine Torrance, Louise Hale, Martha Stansfield, and I met daily to discuss the campus and the world. Cleo Heron, head of the history department, was instrumental with Dr. Armstead in the establishment of the Agnes Scott chapter of Phi Beta Kappa. She promoted the triangular debate with Randolph Macon and Sophie Newcomb and organized the Public Lecture Association. One of her students, Quinnell Harold, endowed our only graduate fellowship, designed by the donor for advanced work in history, but at Miss Heron's insistence made available to all departments. Walking and tennis were our favorite outdoor sports, and there is scarcely a mile of what is now urban DeKalb County that we did not explore on foot as we searched for wild azalea and picnic spots. Our bacon bats were famous among generations of students who saw us set forth with bucket and bag for Coffee Hill. The same bucket, now that Coffee Hill is a subdivision, goes with Carrie Scandrett, Muriel Hahn, Catherine Omwake, and me 15 miles to Little Arabia on free Saturdays. During the enthusiasm for poetry in the 20s, some of my students organized a poetry club. It flourished for 25 years, and the monthly meetings in my room over a cup of coffee quickened the creativity of our young poets, from Jan F. Preston to Mary Beth Little. In time, I was made chairman of the lecture committee and served so long that many people think of me as introducing lecturers rather than as teaching English literature. My committee brought Edna Millay, Arthur Compton, Reinhold Niebuhr, but perhaps our most notable achievement was the friendship with Robert Frost, which brings him back to the campus each year. There were funny times, as when Loretta Taft, the Chicago sculptor, came out from Atlanta by streetcar, missed the Agnes Scott stop, and found himself in Atlanta when he should have been at dinner here. And disturbing times, as when a sleet storm kept the Atlanta audience from hearing Thornton Wilder. But whatever the problem, through the years of my chairmanship, Mr. Stukes was always standing by to help. These activities were the extras. The real joy has been in the teaching. Always there have been students to whom freshman and sophomore English, Chaucer and modern poetry were just hard. But always there have been some who have caught the spark and gone from class with shining faces. These, plus a wise and friendly president, an understanding department head, and congenial colleagues, have made Agnes Scott, for me, a good place in which to live and work for 36 years.
As Dean of Students and Miss Nanette Hopkins' successor at Agnes Scott, I have been asked by the alumni to talk to you about her, as I did at the dedication of Hopkins Hall, the dormitory named for her. Rarely does one have such a privilege, the opportunity of trying to put into words what Miss Hopkins meant, rather means to me. I assure you that I approach this opportunity with a feeling of complete inadequacy, because, for me, Miss Hopkins cannot be put into words. I shall, however, in all humbleness, attempt to give the impressions I have of her. They are based upon my association with Miss Hopkins during my college years as one of her girls, as she always called us, and later during the 12 or so years I worked under and with her in the dean's office. When I think of Miss Hopkins, there come to my mind such qualities as strength and gentleness, selflessness and self-control, dignity, poise, charm, graciousness, a delightful sense of humor. Although she was so gentle, quiet, and soft-spoken, there was ever that certainty of action based on courage of conviction. Miss Hopkins gave of herself completely to Agnes Scott. No demand it made on her time and strength was ever too great. Miss Hopkins had a rare gift of listening, and the equally rare gift of changing with changing times. Yet she, at all times, held for each one of us the highest standards for work and play. Combined with these qualities was a genuine sense of fun. I can hear her laughing now as she talked about the comic strips in the morning paper, or the predicaments of Amos and Andy, which she had heard the night before over the radio her girls, the alumni, had given her. She thoroughly enjoyed the Sunday morning breakfasts of waffles and coffee with Miss Alexander and Miss Fithian in West Lawn, the strawberry shortcake with Miss Doherty on the porch of the old infirmary, the mid-morning cup of coffee in response to the tap on the radiator from Miss Miller, whose room was just over her office. The Agnes Scott tradition of coffee drinking, I am sure, must have originated with Miss Hopkins. Deeply rooted as her life was in the college, she was also keenly aware of world affairs. Woodrow Wilson's picture hung on her office wall, but on her desk was a picture of the great English Bible scholar and preacher, Camel Morgan, for Miss Hopkins was deeply spiritual, too. One of the places from which she was most missed during her illness and after her death was the front row seat in chapel where she sat each chapel period. The passage she most frequently read at Vespers was the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians. The hymn was Love Divine, All Loves Excelling. She usually closed her prayers with the phrase, In the all-prevailing name of Jesus. Everybody on the campus felt her influence and had real affection for her. It was well expressed by Mary Cox, who came to Agnes Scott in its opening years as a personal maid to two students and stayed on at the college, even until after Miss Hopkins' death, as the maid on first floor Inman. When asked why she had never married, Mary Cox replied, Miss Hopkins never married, and what is good enough for Miss Hopkins is good enough for me. Her girls feel the affection, appreciation, and admiration that Mary Cox expressed, and their feeling takes visible form in Hopkins Hall, the dormitory which the alumni gave in her honor. Our desire is through it to perpetuate her influence in the college whose ideals and life she so largely shaped. In its simple, dignified beauty, it seems a fitting tribute.